To the Foxworthy Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Fox. I'm here with my co-host, Taylor Gaines.
Hello!
Currently, your column for Gainesvillescene.com, which we used to pimp on this podcast, is that a thing, or that's kind of,
it's dead? It can be a thing. Actually, long story short,
not to put you on the spot,
editor of the website moved to a different country, so I actually should probably figure out whether I can still write for them or not. I'm assuming I can, because it was a unpaid...
Right.
Gig, but we'll see. Try to start doing some stuff. And Obviously we're back here trying to do this again, so.
Yeah, we're back. It's been a minute. I don't really know any other way to put it. I'm not even sure the last time we recorded, but we basically missed an entire summer of television. I think we basically graduated college and then didn't know if this was going to be feasible to record regularly. So there's a lot that's been happening. I think we wanted to kind of touch base because
behind the curtain
we've missed a lot, but we've been catching up and kind of talking. I think we wanted to just kind of highlight a few shows that we're really impressed with for the fall, I guess kind of late summer fall, because some shows have been on for 6 or 7 weeks, other shows have been on for just a few weeks.
And the way we were thinking about it is there's just a lot of stuff on that's really good.
Yeah.
Like, just as a baseline. So we sort of want to highlight the things that have stood out even above the really good to just kind of transcend the moment here.
We've talked ad nauseum about how there's so much stuff. I'm sure all of you who watch TV know that there's so much stuff because you can't keep up with it all.
We won't even complain about it anymore.
There's a new Amazon. There's been a new Amazon series dropped every week of September, every Friday. There's been more or less a new Netflix show dropped
since January.
I don't even know when. There's shows I've watched pieces of, but anyway, yeah, so everything's pretty good. I mean, occasionally you come across something that's just totally not worth your time at all, but everything's pretty good. You kind of just have to find what appeals to you and kind of what draws you in the most and what you want to spend your time watching.
Good news. There's probably something out there that appeals to you.
There's probably
that you'll enjoy.
Many things. But I think today we kind of agreed that we were going to talk about The Good Place on NBC, new network comedy.
Before you get really specific, I guess the way I sort of wanted to frame it is we're just going to talk about three shows together that have elevated above the rest that we sort of agree on. And then we're each going to pick a wild card of sorts that has stood out to us.
A fourth show, and I think you have something different from me. But there's three shows that we... I think there's three shows that we both agree are pretty top-notch, like cream-of-the-crop type stuff. Very different, but we kind of found a way to kind of tie them all together and kind of explain what makes them so good.
You can list them off. I don't know what order you want to talk about them in.
Right. I mean, we don't necessarily have to talk about them in this order, but I mentioned The Good Place on NBC, which is produced by Mike Schur, who did The Office, Parks and Rec, and currently Brooklyn Nine-Nine, too.
He's a producer. Dan Gore is the showrunner, right?
I believe so, yeah.
And I believe I heard... I wish there were actual statistics on this stuff and sort of a... list of staff writers on TV shows, because I'm always pretty interested in that, but my understanding is a lot of the Parks and Rec writing staff is working on The Good Place.
That wouldn't surprise me, but yeah, the title card says The Good Place, created by Mike Schur, but he has his hand on a lot of things, and he's been a producer, like I said, on a bunch of other NBC comedies and things that we actually really like. The other thing we were going to talk about was Atlanta on FX, which is created by Donald Glover and his brother. Or I think maybe it's just...
Stephen Glover?
The credit... His brother writes on it, but I think he's the credited creator, Donald Glover. But a lot of the episodes are written by his brother, Stephen.
A.K.A. Childish Gambino.
Right.
For the hip among us.
And the other thing we were going to talk about was the new HBO prestige sci-fi drama, Westworld, which has kind of an interesting backstory, which we might touch on a little bit. But I think what we wanted to say, basically, is that these three shows are really good. And what makes them so good, Taylor...
That's it. All
you kind of had this.
It's been fun reuniting. These shows are good.
Rusty, but these shows are all really good. They're all completely different, but there is kind of something about the way that they kind of build a world that you want to spend time in, which I think we're talking about is the key to what makes these kind of stand out, is that you can kind of dig into a world that has kind of an interesting, fun set of rules and, you know, quirks and sort of things that they can... It sort of allows for endless possibilities.
You're right. The thing that... There's two things that stand out to me about them that unite them, sort of, and one of them is obviously that. The other is this way that these shows are attempting to do things that other shows really haven't done, particularly with Atlanta and The Good Place, because Atlanta is such a specific, and this obviously connects to what you're talking about with the world building of the shows. It's such a specific worldview and something that we've really never seen on TV before, mm-hmm. that it's almost compelling just because of that.
Right.
But then the show is also actually really, really good. So I guess let's talk about Atlanta first, since I just sort of stumbled into it.
So but. Atlanta is, it takes place in Atlanta. It's about a sort of...
In Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia, for those who don't know.
Right. But it is actually filmed there. Is that correct? That's my understanding. Is it's actually shot in Atlanta, I'm pretty sure. Like, intentionally. I don't know if that's...
I've only been to Atlanta two or three times, but you know.
I'm pretty sure that it's shot there.
Pretty sure it feels like it's Atlanta.
But it's not really, here's the thing, it's not really about anything. It's just kind of about people.
It's about
It doesn't really have like, people? It doesn't really have a theme. It doesn't really have a plot, necessarily. I couldn't tell you, like, each episode kind of does whatever it wants. But you...
That's almost an understatement. To say that it does whatever it wants.
It does whatever it wants.
Almost no one wants until they realize that they wanted it all along.
Right. I mean, do you want to give, like, a baseline of, like, what is the show about in terms of, like, who the people are and, like, what, like, the plot and characters?
I guess...
It's just about a...
If you were forced to say what the show is about, I suppose you would say it is about Donald Glover. What is his character's name?
Earn?
Earn?
Mm-hmm. Earn, like U-R-N? Like earn money.
Oh.
Like short for earnest.
Not like put your ashes in it?
No, pronounced the same way, but not spelled that way.
So Earn, he wants to be like a music rep?
Yeah, he wants to represent
even
his cousin.
It's the 21st
who's
century.
Kind of an up-and-coming rapper.
Right, so that's basically, if you were forced to describe the show, you would say that it's about Earn trying to elevate Paperboy to superstar.
His cousin, which I guess his cousin's name is Alfred, but his rapper name is Paperboy.
Isn't Paperboy spelled with an I, too?
Yeah, Paperboy spelled B-O-I.
I love that I didn't know Earn, and I knew how to spell Paperboy. And then Paperboy's sidekick, who's sort of the Three Stooges, which one? Are they all idiots, or is there one that's more of an idiot than
I have no idea, honestly.
Well, I don't know. His friend... whose name I also don't know, even though I just said it earlier. Darius, right?
Darius? I don't know. You want me to look it up?
It's fine.
Let's just make
it's
sure.
Fine. There's three people. One of them's a rapper. One of them's Donald Glover. One of them is a goofball.
And, it's great. It's a great show, though.
And maybe Donald Glover's girlfriend on the show is also a main character. But for the most part, it's just those three. And they kind of just live life and hijinks ensue. Like, there's really no...
There is no plot, really.
...other way to describe it. It's fluency and comfort switching between serious topics and comedy is really something to behold. The mastery of tone from the first second of the show is incredible.
And it looks gorgeous. I mean, it's shot in a really interesting way, for sure. Do you disagree? You're shaking your head.
No, it is.
It doesn't look like TV, just, really.
No, I was just trying to think of some images that stood out to me, but it's just the writing is really what I remember from it, even though it is a nice looking
but
show.
But our point is that we're kind of giving you a lot of basic, kind of vague. But that's the thing is it kind of has a it's very
kind of,
specific.
It is kind of vague.
But it is kind of vague. Like it's very specific. The world that you spend time in is
Atlanta,
very specific.
Specific yet vague.
But it's kind of vague, and it's like there's nothing driving it necessarily.
I mean, I guess what we
you're
could
just
say,
sort of invested in hanging out with these people and seeing what happens and what kind of
I guess what we could say is like one episode is about Earn trying to take his girl on a date.
right,
trying to
and
afford
having,
it.
And having no money.
Another right. episode is totally Paperboy related. Playing in an Atlanta celebrity basketball game. And
mm-hmm.
a famous person shows up of sorts.
Right.
And it's just really interesting because it's a show that really tries to tackle what it's like to not make a lot of money and survive
mm-hmm.
in a really realistic and serious yet funny way. The episode where he tries to take his girlfriend out to dinner mm-hmm. is really incredible.
Yeah.
For someone who recently graduated college and is probably working on a similar budget. It's just it's just somehow relatable, even though it's so specific
mm-hmm.
and not my life, you know?
Right.
It's one of those things where when you make something so specifically that it's unlike anything else, people will find stuff to relate to in it, I think. That might be a point that
right.
I would have to expand on more for you to understand, but that's sort of just something I feel about specificity and storytelling in general. People will grasp onto something when you do a really good job and make something memorable and specific.
Is there anything else we want to say about Atlanta specifically? I mean, pertaining to this point. I mean, I think really the thing that we're trying to say about tying these shows together that we kind of highlight as some of the best of the fall season is just like how deeply you get entrenched into the specific world and the specific point of view. And I think The Good Place does that literally in its first scene.
Almost instantly.
Right.
And I think what's really cool about The Good Place is that it's very honest in
right.
some ways where there, I don't know how much to spoil it. I guess you might guess from the title. What would you say? How would you describe it to people?
I mean, it's more or less a whimsical, sort of quirky interpretation of what we'll call it.
Afterlife?
We'll call it right the afterlife, possibly a heaven,
possibly
kind of
not.
A vague, maybe like a purgatory. We're not really sure.
But what's interesting about it is the show doesn't dance around. It answers the questions that it thinks are important in a way. I'm trying to remember. Oh, like in the first like 2 minutes of the episode, Kristen Bell says to Ted Danson something along the lines of, wait, so which religion was right? And he makes a joke about it, basically. But mm-hmm. but it just takes these questions that if you're building a world that's supposed to be something about the afterlife, they're questions that people would have, whether they're important to the storytelling of the show or not, people would have them. And the characters in the show don't avoid them.
Right.
They pretty much go head on into them, and usually with a clever or funny twist that relates to
right,
yogurt
the
shops
thing
on
is,
every corner.
In a way, it's sort of this weird kind of exposition-heavy thing, because in the first episode, they just kind of lay out all the basics of this world and how it works and how you get there.
It's
and
like a
how,
point system.
How your life lives and how you were chosen to be in the good place and why your house looks the way it looks and why your clothes are a certain way and why everybody... Aren't there like a million ice cream shops?
Frozen yogurt.
Isn't that a thing? Frozen
That's
yogurt.
That's what I was just joking
yeah,
about.
Yeah. So, like, there's a million frozen yogurt shops in heaven, because apparently everyone loves frozen yogurt, and they all have different names, but... And it's colorful, it's very entertaining, it's got a pretty great cast, but it just kind of throws you into a world.
Right.
And you're just,
almost as if you just died and went to heaven.
Right. But it's a world where you... And the episodes, because they're 22 minutes each, just kind of fly by. And they're not... I wouldn't say they're laugh-out-loud funny. They're maybe more clever than funny.
I think that's probably right. I think that at this point in the show, it's very clever, and you spend a lot of time grinning to yourself,
mm-hmm.
but there hasn't been a whole lot of laugh-out-loud moments.
I do kind of bust a gut, because apparently in The Good Place, you're not allowed to use curse words. And that often, those parts often to me are the funniest, because you just don't know when they're coming.
And you know what I love about those is the
fork instead of the profane F word.
You know what I love about those is the meta-ness of them, in the sense that Mike Schur, who we were talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
wanted to make a network show, even in a time where... I mean, this dude worked on The Office, Parks and Recreation, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think he had some production credit on Master of None.
Yeah,
he,
I
he
think
he could
that's
have done
true,
anything for any network. And he went back
right.
to NBC basically because he wanted to prove a point about network shows.
That there's no limits to your creativity.
So when, even when you take something or more well put, when you take something like the bleeping of curse words, the altering of curse words, and make it a part of this world that you're building, it makes me think, on one hand, of course he wanted to do this. What's cool about it is he basically makes a case for network being a more creative medium because of the limitations that you have.
Yes.
Where it's almost like the Seinfeld argument, where a lot of people say the Seinfeld episode, is it The Bet? Do you know, are you familiar with this?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Basically, there's a Seinfeld episode where the entire plot is which characters can last longest without performing, like, a, what's the cleanest way to say it? Like, an inappropriate act on themselves?
Self-pleasure?
Yes. But it was made in, what, the 90s or whatever? So they couldn't say what it was about. And that was half the fun of the episode, is the cleverness
right.
of the way that they
getting around
present it right.
while being frank.
And
right.
even today, where you can show a heck of a lot more on NBC than you could 5 years ago, probably 10 years ago,
right?
He still sort of is making this argument that it's more fun and creative to have to deal with these limitations in the making of your show.
Right. It's like when you have like a high school performing arts troupe. I know a bunch of high school theater teachers, and they're always saying that kind of that exact thing. Is like, we never have any money, so we just have to be creative and find creative ways to do things on a budget. It's kind of the same idea. Like, you put limitations, it's like, all right, well, let's push the boundaries of these limitations. Like, just because we're on a network doesn't mean we can't be as smart and clever as possible. Oh, we can't curse? Well, that works for our story. Like, we'll just have this, like, clever, kind of quippy way to get around that by having everyone say, you know, shirt instead of, you know,
but to
the
your
equivalent
point,
the equivalent of the curse word.
But to your point about it being clever funny and not necessarily laugh out loud funny, I sort of think that it might reach that point in the way that Parks and Rec and The Office also did. Because I don't think that the first seasons of those shows are particularly funny either. I mean, they're funny in some ways. Like, obviously, the basketball episode of The Office is in the first season, and it's pretty fun, pretty memorable. But I'm invested in at least three of the characters already, and the show is so clever and thoughtful that it seems like it's only a matter of time before I'm kind of rolling around laughing at it, you would think.
Right.
Mainly, partially because I like the characters, and mainly because I trust the production crew making it. So I'm all in on Good Place, too. It's much different feel than Atlanta.
Totally. But once again, a very specific world that is its own thing and has its own language and its own rules that you can buy into very easily, but that's part of what makes it entertaining, is just how specific and sort of, you know, the originality of,
the world
that they kind of...
But you know what both of those shows have in common is that they both have a lot of comedy, a lot of funny parts. I would say that the third show we want to talk about probably has a little less of the
funny. Yeah, I don't
think
there was any comedy,
not a lot
really.
Of clever ha-ha or laughing ha-ha. So let's talk about Westworld. Let's get to the...
Yeah, this is a big one. Westworld
It was 75 minutes long, yes.
Yeah, this is a big one. It is HBO's new sort of... Hopefully, I'm sure that they're hoping that it's going to be sort of the successor to Game of Thrones in terms of dominating the conversation.
Not a lot coming down the pike for dramas on HBO right
now. Yeah, HBO kind of has, like, they seem to be doing well with comedies. I mean, Veep is obviously, like, the kind of reigning champion in the comedy world. They won the Emmy 2 years in a row. And, you know, most of what they put out is good, but, you know, Vinyl was kind of a dud. Didn't last. I guess there were kind of some high points of season one, but they ultimately decided not to renew it. Game of Thrones has announced that it's got two seasons left.
Two shortened seasons, too.
And there's, I guess 8 episodes a season. So
Leftovers
they only have...
Ending.
Yeah, The Leftovers is already announced, even though, like, the second season was pretty critically acclaimed. Like, they came back and said, like, we're going to do a third season, but that's the end. So they don't have a lot, really. But
so
this
who
has
do
been
they put
in
their
development.
Faith in? Chris Nolan's brother.
Chris Nolan's brother, Jonathan Nolan, who also worked on a CBS drama, which is, I think, in its final season now, called Person of Interest.
And for all you hipsters out there, wrote Memento.
Yeah, wrote Memento, wrote the short story, and I guess co-wrote the screenplay that the film is based on his short story. But
and
anyway,
this show is based on a film
by Michael Crichton.
So he didn't write a book, Westworld. He just wrote a script, Westworld.
But he also apparently directed the film, the original film version.
He directed the film?
He wrote and directed the film version.
I don't even know what Michael Crichton looks like.
Michael Crichton, the
is he a white
obviously
guy?
Most famous. Yeah, he's white.
He's a...
Most famous, obviously, for like Jurassic Park and its sort of many sequels.
Was Jaws
in
a
the
book?
World.
Did he write Jaws?
I don't believe so, no.
Just a thought.
kind of known for heady science fiction, I guess, like Andromeda
but
Strain.
Also, like Empty, right? Or am I not a reader?
To be honest with you, I've never read a Michael Crichton book. But obviously, like Jurassic Park is like it's kind of a smart,
yeah.
Like it's silly,
yeah.
But the concept is kind of smart in a sci-fi way.
But I think that Westworld was really smart. At least in this first episode.
Right, so...
It honestly made me think of Black Mirror, for those who haven't seen the sci-fi anthology
yeah.
show. It made me think of if someone blew out a Black Mirror episode for a full season, because when the first episode ended after 75 minutes or whatever it was, I was just thinking, I don't know if I could deal with this kind of heft week after week when it comes to the thematic ideas that they're playing with. But they're also fascinating.
Right. So this was a film originally in 1973. I guess HBO announced in 2013, a couple years ago, that it was going to series and that it was going to be a remake of sorts with sort of the basic concept intact.
It's about Kanye West.
A reimagining.
And he basically builds this world with the Kardashians and the Jenners.
Where you live out a simulation of being robbed.
Oh.
Right?
Too soon?
I mean, you're the one who had to bring Kanye into it.
Well, Jonathan Nolan's the one who brought Kanye into it. Sorry.
Terrible. That's a terrible pun. Anyway, Westworld takes its name.
It's the only pun I
takes
can
its
think
name
of.
And major sort of sci-fi concept from the film, 1973 film. But this is kind of interesting because this is a project that's been in the works for a while. In various, I guess there was a point where the film was going to be remade. They were going to remake the film into another film, and I guess Tarantino was attached to it at one point, and it was going to star some interesting people. But anyway,
so imagine
they finally got it off the ground.
Jurassic World or Jurassic Park with
same thing. Dinosaur theme park.
Imagine
but
that.
But with people.
Robot people. And it's also the Wild West.
Right.
And you can... I guess this sort of gives away kind of the opening 20 to 30 minutes of the episode are a little jarring, where you're sort of thrown in trying to just figure out what the hell's happening.
Right.
So maybe this spoils that a little bit if you don't want to know literally anything, but basically a world where rich people can go and live out their Western fantasies
right.
with
so
these robots.
It's like the craziest, most exaggerated form of a theme park, basically. Super immersive. Everything is super realistic. I'm guessing it is real. They haven't really explained how everything is built. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, it appears...
Like, is the world real? Or is it all like... Is it like going to Disney World?
I think it's like going to Disney World. My understanding, and this is sort of getting into the weeds a little bit...
I'm just curious what you think.
There's a scene where some of the park management people are standing on this balcony, and it was shown sort of that the I'm probably getting too far away from that. there was this wide expanse of desert and stuff, and it was shown to be like up on a mountain, sort of. So my understanding is they used real ground and built this whole world.
Right. A real sort of desert
like
landscape.
You can just walk on in. Like, I'm pretty sure it's not... You don't have to get into some weird device to transport there or anything.
Well, maybe
but
we'll
that's
get
way
further
beside
into
the
that.
Point.
But
that's
the way. Point is that you are immersed in a Western world, in a Western civilization. There are saloons. You can sleep with the saloon girls. You can shoot people.
The robots
cannot harm you. I guess the robots are referred to as hosts, and the people visiting the park are referred to as guests.
But you can sure harm
the
robots.
You can live out your fantasies in Westworld.
One way to put it.
And then you see kind of both sides. You see the people kind of behind the scenes in whatever future kind of world it is where we have the technology to, you know, build this kind of experience, and you see the people creating it and programming the robots and all of that, and it's all very sci-fi, kind of sleek corridors and cool tech, and then you have the Western world when, you know, we get to see what happens in the Western world. I don't think we should say too much more in terms of plot and character beyond that, because it's a little
spoilery. All we should say is that Anthony Hopkins is a gift to any form of...
I kind of thought he retired, but he kind of pops up in random things. I guess he's like...
He is...
He's basically Odin in the Marvel Universe. And
what?
This.
He's in the Marvel movies?
Yeah, he's Thor's daddy.
Who knew? I haven't
Everybody
seen...
Everybody knew.
He's been
in two of those movies.
I haven't even seen
Whatever.
Civil War yet.
Anyway, that was the last
point
time
is,
I really saw him in anything.
He's probably...
Point.
Not in the episode that much. It's probably very much like Silence of the Lambs, where
right.
It feels like he's in, like...
Two or three scenes,
half
maybe,
of the episode.
Out of the 75-minute thing.
Yeah, but he is just so compelling. I love him. Anyway, we won't talk about...
Don't disagree.
...too many specifics, but what's really cool about the show is that it just swings for the fences. It doesn't belittle the... sci-fi like ideas that it is playing with, and it doesn't cut short really any part of the story.
Right.
And it pretty much goes all in on it. It trusts itself, and it raises questions that it, who knows if it's even good enough to raise.
Right.
But it goes for it, and at this juncture in the show's run after one episode, it's just something that makes me sort of sit back and go, wow, I'm just thrilled that they went for this. And this world does feel pretty fully realized for as massive an undertaking as it might have been to build it. And there's some beautiful shots.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. Performances are all pretty good across the board. Obviously, Anthony Hopkins is a legend, but... Yeah, but once again, tying into kind of the other things we were talking about, is it what makes it stick out is just how committed they are to giving you a world. I don't know that this is a world that I want to spend time in a fun way as much as Atlanta and The Good Place. It's not like I'm like, oh, let me go on into Westworld today, because
it's
such
a world
a fun
that you're
place
interested
to
uncover and unpack.
Right. It's intriguing, and you kind of want to dig into it.
But hey, I think we're running sort of long, so let's get to our wild cards. What do you got?
Halt and Catch Fire is so freaking good this year. Like, it's just so good. I know this is not a show people watch. I know that I'm not going to convince anyone to watch it. But honestly, start with season two, watch the second season, and watch the third season. It's a really, really good adult drama that doesn't pander. It's very smart. Performances are good. It's interesting. It has some flaws here and there, but it's only honestly been getting better and better, and they're on a hot streak right now. Like, the last few episodes of this season, I know you're behind a few weeks, but I'm telling you, you're going to get to them, and you're going to be like, damn, you weren't kidding. Like, it's gotten really good.
If you ask me, there's one reason to watch the show. Well, that's reductive.
Are you going to say something immature?
Yes.
It's Carrie Bechet.
Can I not? Am I not allowed to say
Go
immature things?
Say it.
Well, you just ruined the surprise.
She's beautiful.
The goddess,
what can I say?
The
she's
goddess
beautiful.
Carrie Bechet.
She's great
she's,
on the show,
she's
but
great.
She's very pretty
She
to
is
look
beautiful,
at.
But she's also great on the show. And she, I think that she provides the emotional center of the show in a lot of ways. I think that Cameron is oftentimes too cold and distant to fill that role.
Mm-hmm. I think she's pretty good too, though.
I think actually,
but their
pretty much across the board, everyone in that show is pretty good. It's just we were sort of debating this the other day. The thing about it for me is that I just don't know if it's sort of fits in my transcendent show
right.
category.
You were
it's something
me.
That I really love when I get around to it, but it's always the show that I get around to.
You were saying that even though you're behind, like, it doesn't necessarily, for you, so far it hasn't really had that special quality that makes it, what?
What?
What did I say?
I don't know, just special sounded so condescending. I was like,
well, but that's kind of fair, though. I think that's kind of a fair argument. Like, I just think it's really good this year, and I'm excited about it.
I think it's great, too. I just think we're talking about shows that have to stand out in this time. Right. Well, obviously, it hasn't stood out, because no one watches it.
Right.
But, you know, shows like that, like, you mentioned the words great adult drama, I think, and it's TV's, well, we're just in a world where great adult drama is not a thing that is catchy.
Right.
I mean, when was the last time a movie was released that was just great adult drama? It always has to be, like, great adult drama with kids and dinosaurs and aliens.
Right.
And something.
Or, yeah. So, you find that stuff in indie movies that are hard to distribute and hard to make. But, like, best movie I saw this whole year was a movie called Hell or High Water, which I don't know. I think it's doing okay in the box office, but, I mean, it's got a national treasure, Jeff Bridges. Incredible performance.
Oh,
it's got...
I thought you were about to make a national treasure comparison. It's like, we've stolen the Declaration.
No.
We have to kidnap the
it
president.
It has National Treasure Jeff Bridges in it, in a terrific performance. It's got Chris Pine, a.k.a. Captain Kirk, and... What is his other franchise?
Wonder Woman.
Well, soon to be Wonder Woman. Ben Foster. But it's a great indie movie. It's not about...
Zechariah?
It's not really about anything. Why are you still talking about Chris Pine's filmography? Like, we moved on. He's
Margot
Captain
Robbie?
Kirk.
Are we talking about Suicide Squad? Did you see Suicide Squad?
I didn't. Let's not get into
Me
it.
Me neither.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't.
I might wait now because apparently... this is so off topic. Today they announced there's going to be an extended cut on Blu-ray. So we can see all of the Jared Leto scenes that were
really
cut from the movie.
I thought you were about to say there's going to be a Suicide Squad 2. Is that
Oh, I'm sure there probably will be. Or
did
something.
It make money? Did it do well?
I don't know.
I know most people hated it, but I don't know how it did.
That's a whole other discussion. But yeah,
you sound
like someone else we know. But anyway, *Halt and Catch Fire* is a terrific drama, and it will eventually be on Netflix. And if you wait, that's
first
fine,
two seasons are on Netflix.
First two seasons are on Netflix, but I'm saying the greatness that is the third season will probably eventually land there. We don't have word whether or not the ratings are piss poor. It's probably in jeopardy of being canceled, but there's nothing we can do about that. I can't convince enough people to watch it.
You know, I thought it was going to get canceled last season, and it didn't. So,
but I'm glad they brought it back, because it's honestly the best it's ever been. So, anyway, not to interrupt you, but I do urge you to watch it. The first season has a lot of problems. It's very...
AMC. Did you mention AMC?
It is on AMC. It's very kind of Mad Men-esque, trying to use the Mad Men template.
The first season is like if someone in a Hollywood boardroom was like, what if we mixed... Mad Men and Breaking Bad,
right,
and made that into a show about Steve Jobs.
Right.
It really comes across that way.
Right,
for,
it's not
like,
great. It has a few moments. Second season, huge leap in quality. Third season, even better. Like, it's just, that show has been fire the last couple weeks. It's great.
It's been fire?
It's been fire.
Would you say it's Halt and Catch Fire?
Go ahead, stop. We're horrible today. This is awful. Go ahead.
I'm getting really uncomfortable in my chair.
Yeah, we
my show is on Cinemax, and it's called Quarry.
Yeah, I don't have access to Cinemax.
That
so.
Is Q-U-A-R-R-Y, which I just feel like when you say it, it's a hard word to say. It's Quarry.
Quarry.
Quarry, like rocks.
Quarry, yeah, exactly.
It's effectively... So the creative team, the two guys who get the created by credit at the beginning, were writers on Rectify, which... we've talked about in the past, was my favorite show of 2015, and is pretty much one of my favorite shows of all time.
And something I've never watched.
And they took their writing chops to this show, which I believe is based off of a novel or a series of novels or something to that effect, that I don't want to spoil, but it's more or less like if you took the thoughtfulness and observative, is that a word? Observational?
Sure.
Observational. If you took the thoughtfulness and observationalness of Rectify.
Yeah.
And then combined it with like an action show.
Uh-huh.
Which doesn't sound at all. If you've watched Rectify, you probably would understand that that does not sound like two things you should combine. But that's basically what it is, and I love it. It's got three or four great performances, at least in the episode that I've seen. The first episode functioned as a nice little mini-movie on its own. It's just a really fun and thoughtful and action-packed show.
Okay.
And it's just really one of those shows that reminds me of Justified in a lot of ways.
Oh, always.
Where you
I'm a sucker
kinda,
for that.
Where you're just kind of thinking, these characters are cool, and they're doing fun stuff, and the plotting is really intricate and thought out, and I really am interested to see what it looks like week to week, because it's like I said, I have only seen the first episode, but it was definitely one of my favorite things that I have watched in the last few months.
Okay. I think that's going to do it.
Yeah, we didn't. We knocked out a few things. We didn't even have time to get near with a... We didn't have put a 10-foot pole near Robot or...
Mr. Robot was good this season, though. I kind of liked it, I think, more than the internet did. But,
Isn't it easy to like things more than the internet does?
I mean, yeah, the internet hates everything. What else is happening?
Too much to cover at the end of the show
much.
Here. We're way over our normal time,
we are.
So.
You know, You're the Worst is still great.
You're
Another
the
great
worst.
FX comedy. I guess
Stranger Things
was a big deal
came
this summer.
And went since we last had podcast.
Yeah, I know. That's still in the consciousness, though. Everyone's losing their minds about season 2 coming in 2017.
R.I.P. Barb.
Anyway... I guess that's going to wrap it up. We'll probably... Taylor's back in town now, kind of, so I think we're going to try to do these a little more consistently. I don't know
if we're
still going to be on the Establishing Shot podcast network.
That's a great question.
But I'm going to say that, just in case. you should check out their site. I know they just hired a bunch of new staff writers and stuff, and they're putting out all kinds of stuff about
US
TV and movies.
Best and brightest.
TheEstablishingShot.us, I believe, is there.
Yes, sir.
Anyway... I'm Brian Fox.
You can
Taylor
find
Gaines.
Us at thefoxworthypodcast.com.
Yes.
And all of our episodes on iTunes.
Absolutely. We'll be back. I think we're going to keep up with talking about Westworld. I think we'll revisit that because we've only seen one episode. I feel like that's going to be a big one. We'll come back in a few weeks, talk about it. We'll touch on some other things that we've been seeing, other trends. There's lots of Netflix stuff. There's a Joe Swanberg kind of anthology comedy series called Easy. There's the new Marvel show, Luke Cage, on Netflix. We didn't even touch anything on Amazon, i.e. Fleabag, One Mississippi, or Transparent Season 3. So we'll definitely be back, and we'll be talking about some of the stuff that we've been watching. And I guess we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Foxworthy Podcast.